I'm that singing Brunel. I'm sitting out in the grass. I'm that singing Brunel. Sitting out in the grass. I'm just sitting there waiting to sing some woman that bad. I sit there waiting, waiting both day and night. I sit there waiting, waiting both day and night. And if you come along in, mama, say you know I'm gonna sing you right.
All right, everybody. It's Brian Vinny's show here. It's Tuesday, October 6, 2010, here at figure4online.com/wrestlingobserver.com. For those of you that are freeloaders, we've made some changes to this show. Quite frankly, nobody cares about what's going on nowadays, let's be honest. We're going to talk a little bit about Raw. We'll talk a little bit about the pay-per-view. Maybe talk a little bit about SmackDown. But largely, we're just going to tell you what you really need to watch. Because it was either really, really good, or it was really, really bad. That's pretty much what we're going to talk about for those shows. And then we're going to get into the meat of this program. Talk about some stuff that we don't always talk about or haven't talked about for a while. For those of you that have been on the board, been having some arguments with people, I know that's shocking, about the state of wrestling today. One guy in particular who seems to think things are great. Things are going just fine. WWE's been around for so long, they can't possibly do anything incorrect. It's just, you know, pay-per-view buy rates are horrendous. Ratings are down. Every conceivable business measuring
metric
down. But hey, things are just fine. Don't question Vince McMahon. He never makes any mistakes. Anyway, the point is, I remember, and it was funny because I was talking about this when arguing with this person, that I remember in the spring of 1998. When WCW was at its peak, and actually in many ways doing better than WWE is doing today. They had sold out like 16 straight house shows, their ratings were through the roof, whole nine yards, things were great, making money, it was like $125 million a year, it was the biggest year in the history of any wrestling company in the entire history of the earth, is how well WCW did this year. Anyway, in the spring of that year, despite all of this great stuff happening, I wrote an article about how this company's in trouble. They need to make some changes. And 3 years later, dead. Now, I'm not saying that in 3 years, WWE is going to be dead, but I am saying that there are problems in WWE. I recognize them. Almost everybody listening to this recognizes them. Except for this person apparently doesn't recognize them. But largely, 99% of you recognize all of these problems. These problems need to be remedied. These things aren't just going to turn around. You can't just hope and pray that, I guess, technological advances will occur that will, you know, make up for pay-per-view buys being down and such. Shit's happening. There's trouble. So, anyway, we just happen to turn on 24/7, and what should be airing on WWE Classics but Nitro from spring of 1998, the exact time that I was writing this article. So, we're going to look back. We're going to look back at Nitro from April 27, 1998, when WCW was at its peak, and I was writing about how doom was coming. And it was funny, because around that time, WCW fans, the real WCW hardcores, were saying the exact same thing this person is saying now. Brian, you need to quit preaching the gloom and doom. Look at all these shows they're selling out. Everything's great. Yeah, well, everything wasn't great. So, we're going to talk about that show, and then we're going to wrap it up with one of the best tag matches I've seen in a long time. Which featured, in fact, one of the best hot tags I've seen in many years.
Maybe all my life.
Maybe all time all my life. So, that's coming up, everybody. And to start off, to kick off the deal, for those that have not been listening to the show of late, because they're freeloaders, we're not repeating stuff anymore. I'm not doing a Raw report. I did one last night on Wrestling Observer Radio. If you want to hear the Raw report, well, you're going to have to sign up. Because on Tuesdays now, Vinny is going to mention the things on that show that he thought were great, if anything. and things on that show that he thought were horrible, if anything. Same thing with the pay-per-view this past Sunday, SmackDown this past Friday night. We're going to get through these things quickly. Nobody needs repetition. We just need the meat. We just need to cut out the boring aspects of the show. And I should note, by the way, when talking about Nitro, if we cut out the boring aspects of Nitro from 1998, the show would have been
6 minutes long.
6 minutes long, yeah. So I'm trying to do that with this particular program here. So, Vinny, starting with SmackDown. Yeah, we'll start with SmackDown. We'll go in order.
Did we already do SmackDown?
What?
I thought we did SmackDown on the last show.
Actually, we did. We talked about the live event. Yeah. Never mind. Starting with Hell in the Cell. Was there anything good on this show?
There were two good matches in the show. The opener, the three-way submissions count anywhere match. There's not much to say about it other than they had a good match. It was three guys. They, given a weird, wacky, pointless tip that probably hurt the match, they still went out and had a three-ish star affair. Just three guys working hard to have a match. There was a point where Miz disappeared. And when I say disappeared, I don't mean that he took a move and fell out of the ring. Early on, he just walked out of the ring. And so Bryan and Morrison wrestled. And Bryan hooked a heel hook, which is an instant submission if you get it right. He had this on for like a minute, and Miz was just gone. Mm. That was stupid. And they brought him to the crowd, which usually sucks, but these guys were working hard, so it was good. They did some spots with a box. Morrison got to use some of his parkour. Hit a big wacky dive off the lighting stage onto both guys. Riley came out to interfere. Always love it when guys come out to interfere like this in no DQ matches, because why do you wait till the finish? Why not just come out and wrestle as a tag team the entire match?
That would make too much sense.
I see. So he took out Morrison. Morrison took a completely stupid flip, a completely stupid front bump onto the ramp. Then Danielson shoved Riley off the stage, and it tapped out Miz with the LaBelle lock on the ramp. He was the winner. He had defeated his hated rival with the wild card Morrison thrown in. All was right in his world for exactly 24 hours. We also had the other good match was the Cena-Barrett match, which was, I don't know how long it's been since that horrible, awful, terrible Wade Barrett-Chris Jericho match on Raw, but this was the opposite extreme of that. He looked really good here. He looked like he totally belonged in a WWE semi-main event. That's good. And the booking with the entire Raw roster coming down to clear the ring of Nexus, and Cena got to kick out of everything, and Barrett, even though he had to cheat to win in the end, he did get to escape both the FU and the STF. So he was far from a geek in this match. And then, as we all know, McGillicuddy and Husky Harris interfered and Wade won. And then was the best part of the entire show. The shots of outraged youngsters, shocked children, weeping women in the crowd.
Did you see the YouTube video on the front page?
I have not watched that yet. I saw the link. I have not. But
what are you waiting for?
I don't know. I saw it and thought I'll check that out in my next thing. I want to know this, and I forgot it.
This kid had a panic attack. He literally had a panic attack. He will never be the same. Like, he will be a criminal when he grows up.
That sucks.
That's the behavior that was exhibited in this particular video. I also want to say, by the way, I liked the opener, but there was a spot that made me so pissed off. And I'm actually not going to talk about it now because I will address it when we get to the tag match later on in this program. But as far as the Cena-Wade Barrett match, I thought Wade did a great job. I thought the match was shockingly good. I did think WWE guys coming out was actually stupid because the rules were that if Nexus interfered, then Cena just won. So when Nexus surrounded the ring, why did the WWE guys come out? That made no sense. They should have just let them interfere so that Cena would win and then make the save.
Perhaps you are right, but when they came out, it got a giant reaction from the fans.
Sure.
Therefore,
well, the fans, these people aren't
fans
very smart.
Are stupid.
Let's be honest.
So it was perfect for stupid wrestling fans.
Yeah.
We also had the fantastic, speaking of stupid, the fantastic Alberto Del Rio segment where he made his debut on pay-per-view. And he was being himself, how awesome he was, comparing himself to various Texas athletes. Edge came out to confront him, said the Chihuahua thing was stupid, the scarf was stupid, and then Jack Swagger came out.
And the segment became stupid.
This segment became stupid, and then worse, it became a very boring match. This was bad. Maybe it wasn't the worst match of all time, but it was a match the crowd had no desire to watch. The crowd did not know, and Lawler pointed this out, they don't know whether they should cheer Edge or
they
not.
They should chew.
Perhaps they should chew Edge. But They worked hard. They tried, did what they could. I was completely bored, noting things like Edge's drawstring was hanging out of his tights. One guy went woo in the crowd at one point, and then eventually Edge just won. The match was an ordeal. There was a point. It was an ongoing theme, but the announced team, as usual for pay-per-views, was Michael Cole, Jerry Lawler, and Matt Stryker. Michael Cole is basically a babyface. Well, Michael Cole is a polarizing announcer. A polarized announcer, I should say. He was very much a babyface announcer for the John Cena versus Nexus feud. He was begging for Cena to win by any means necessary. He mentioned at one point that if Nexus won, their jobs could be on the line. Mm-hmm. Not sure how that works. But then, he of course loves Miz. He also loved Alberto. Then you have Stryker, who loves all the babyfaces and all the shows, except for no reason, Nexus. He admires them. So between the two of them, you have this wild inconsistency of, I'm a heel announcer, now I am not. And it was, frankly, quite terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, of course, the main event was Undertaker and Kane. It fucking sucked a cock.
That was a terrible match.
It was very long. It was very boring. I don't know who expected more.
May be moving the Buried Alive match up to Bragging Rights, which I'm fine with.
Get it done.
The faster we get this feud over with, the better.
It has failed.
Yeah, and there is a lot of talk that this is the end for The Undertaker. Like, this is his last year. Like, hopefully he makes it to WrestleMania, but it ain't lasting much longer than that. And another guy, gone. Another superstar, out of here. And they're determined to not make stars, which brings us to Raw. Any thoughts on the Daniel Bryan destruction at the hands of Sheamus?
Yeah, it was bullshit. It was stupid bullshit. I mean, well, yeah. there's nothing to say about it to defend it. He's standing there in the ring.
Apparently there's plenty. I've been arguing all day long on the board.
Name names.
Yeah, I don't want to name names, but this fella just says that Daniel will never be a star, so who cares?
Well, if that's your attitude, then they should fire him.
If that's your attitude, then Sheamus should be the champion.
Also true. So, I don't know, but he was standing in the ring, his music was playing, but he didn't get an entrance. He was standing there, his nameplate was falling off the belt. And then Sheamus came out and destroyed him completely, humiliated him, punked him, made him look like a small child, was disqualified for kicking too much ass.
Mm, yeah.
The worst finish on earth.
Yeah.
It should be a ref stoppage, and instead
excessive violence.
He is disqualified for winning on him.
Mm-hmm.
And
but hey, Daniel Bryan got the W.
That's right. He beat a former champion.
Sure.
And I'm sure in storyline, they will say that, you know, Bryan was injured and therefore could not be in the Battle Royal later. But when you had a Battle Royal and the U.S. champion is not in it, it comes off like he is the, at best, mind you, the number 21 contender.
Well, he was. He was hurt so badly by Sheamus.
There were 20 men more deserving of a title shot than Daniel Bryan.
He was hurt so badly he could not come out and compete.
Do we know why that was done yet, by the way? Other than they're just stupid?
All I know is that it was Vince's idea.
They want... Apparently, they think this... They think having Sheamus kill him will suddenly make people want to buy bragging rights. And that is worth whatever long-term loss they get from burying.
They feel that will rehab Sheamus.
Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly. But yeah. And they think it will rehab him to the point it is worth burying Daniel Bryan as well as the U.S. Championship.
Yeah.
That sucked.
They don't know what they're doing.
No, well, they do not know in that one. The Cena feud is actually going great.
Well, so far it is very good.
So far, it's because the whole thing, it was the whole show. If you have not, you don't need me to tell you what happened on Raw by this point, the main angle on Raw. But it is a genius idea because it allows them to do something fresh with John Cena for the first time in about 6 years without pissing off his fan base. Because John Cena did not...
Well, that's not entirely true. There were people walking out after he stepped out of the Battle Royal there at the end. People left the building.
Wasn't the show over?
Well, the show was getting close to over, but these people were very upset.
I see.
Yeah.
Well, I guess it's worse than I would have thought, but it's not...
And that kid that's going to grow up to be a criminal.
There are criminals being spawned as we speak. But this was not John Cena. John Cena did not play Hulk Hogan telling the fans to stick it. John Cena caught himself in a bad situation and is doing his best to, well, do his best. But the fans still cheer for him. He is still wearing his shirts. They still chant his name. They still chant never give up at him. They feel badly for him.
Never give up.
They were chanting never give up. I swear to God that happened. It took me, because I couldn't tell what it was. I had to go back. Then I looked at his shirt and realized, yes, they are chanting never give up at you.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
These are some loyal fans of Mr. Cena.
I have two nitpicks with this angle so far. First, John Cena came out, and apparently his plan was just that, yes, he will wear Nexus's gear, but he's still going to beat all of them up. So, he never intended to... He was
not a man of his word.
No, exactly. Yeah. He was not a man of his word. And if there's one guy who you could have done this storyline with, and the fans would have begged him to defy his word, but he would have stuck by it no matter how much it made him sick because it was the right thing to do, that man is John Cena.
See, here's the problem, though. Here's the problem. It's not the right thing to do. Your choice is to be a man of your word and beat up a bunch of baby faces, or not beat up your friends and not be a man of your word.
They're both wrong things to do.
Sure, but I mean, it's like...
The only...
You know, it would not be very nice if I beat you up.
Many would disagree with that, actually, but we'll go with it.
If I threw this water bottle at you and then started stabbing you with these scissors, that would not be the right thing.
No.
But if I'd given my word to do that, that's not going to hold up in court.
I see.
You know what I mean? So I don't have a problem with that, because John Cena, yes, he was not a man of his word, but he was trying to do the right thing by his friends.
Yeah. The other nitpick is that there's trouble brewing in the Nexus.
Upholding your word to join villains doesn't work with me. Do the right thing, even if you have to tell a white lie.
A white lie?
Yeah.
It's not a white lie. It's a bold-faced, open lie, a defiance of what you promised to do.
Sure.
Of what you put at stake.
If they would have upheld this, I would have been more upset at WWE for just killing another stipulation. But they did hold up to it, so I'm fine.
All right. The other nitpick is that there's trouble brewing in Nexus between Wade Barrett and David Otunga. There's going to be a power play at some point going on.
Can't wait for that one.
Well, that's actually not the nitpick I have. The nitpick is, it's happening and John Cena happens to be there. You would think that if he was this reluctant guy, the reluctant member, that he would have pulled Otunga aside and said, listen, you can't let Wade talk this shit to you. No, Otunga pulled Cena aside. Yeah. So this is not John Cena pulling the strings and playing puppet master. No, John Cena is an unwilling pawn in the power struggle between Otunga and Wade Barrett.
Yeah, maybe so, there's more to come.
It is a nitpick. I acknowledge it's a nitpick. It's working. It seems fresh. It's apparently just pissing off some people, but it's also getting a vastly improved rating. So I give that a giant thumbs up.
Well, I don't know about a vastly improved rating. It recovered from depths of despair. You know what's sad is I have no faith in this angle.
Well, I don't blame you.
This company has now gotten to the point where I have no faith in anything they do. I just don't anymore. You know?
Did you feel that way going into Raw?
I watch it, and it's like, okay, yes, that was in fact good. But do I have any faith it's still going to be good next week? I have a little bit of faith they're going to make it 2 weeks. Do I have any faith this is still going to be good at bragging rights? No. I don't have any faith at all. Maybe I'll be wrong. Maybe I am bitter. Maybe I'm cynical here. But quite frankly, I don't think so. Because there is a track record. And the Daniel Bryan thing is a great example. There's a track record. Caval. I could go on and on. Swagger.
There is, in fact, a giant track record.
There's a track record.
The Hart Dynasty.
The Hart Dynasty. You do something in Nexus.
You build someone up.
Look at how much faith we had in the Nexus angle, and then they beat him at SummerSlam.
You build something up, and then you pull the rug out from under them. For no good reason.
Regardless of what anybody says, Nexus has never been the same since they lost at SummerSlam. Never been the same. Wade Barrett is hated, but as a group, they're really all geeks now. They're really all geeks. And quite frankly, Wade Barrett should be a much bigger star than he is, but he also got beat at SummerSlam. Because they just can't do it. They get worried. We gotta create some new stars. They'll start to get going, and then they have a freak out. And then they gotta go back to putting over all of the same old geeks over and over again. It just happens every time. Like, I have no faith in this. Like, Orton's probably going to beat Barrett and then Miz will cash in the briefcase or something like that. Or Barrett will beat Orton and then Miz will cash in and Barrett will have a 10-second title reign. You know, I know they're going to fuck this whole thing up. It's there's, like, no chance of them not fucking this up. That's how little faith I have in this company right now. They're just going to do something wrong. Hopefully not by next week, but very good chance. So anyway, that's my thoughts on this angle. Yes, it was really fucking good on Monday night.
Week one was good.
It was really good.
We still see about week two.
You know how many week ones I've seen that are really good in the history of wrestling?
Quite a few.
I've even seen them from Vince Russo. I've seen many, many great fucking week ones. It's week two. It's week three. It's week four. Especially when they actually have like they know where they're going at least with this angle. This is not like the GM where at this point they still have absolutely no idea who the GM is going to be. They have absolutely no idea where they're going with the GM. They're going to keep doing what they're doing until someone comes up with a great idea. Okay. So with Cena and Barrett, they actually know where they're going in the end. They've got an end game in mind, but they've only got the end game. They don't have like a week by week storyline. They know where it's going to be at the end. And I don't even think they know when the end is going to be. I suspect the end is just going to be when they feel it's time, which I have this feeling is going to be sooner rather than later, especially if people keep walking out of shows. But the point is, they only have an end game, so they're still booking week to week. Not effective. It's great that you have an end game, but you've got to go backwards and plan out all of your storylines, preferably week by week, leading to the beginning, which would have been this past Monday. You go week to week and something's going to happen. You're going to do something wacky, and by the time you get to that end point, it's going to be nothing like what you plan. And if you plan something good, well, we'll see where it goes. But I just have no faith. No faith. Caval losing to Chavo Guerrero. All of that season of NXT, where you put your faith in Caval and he finally won, and he was rewarded by losing to Chavo. How can anybody have any faith in this? That's one of the reasons that interest is down so far. Where were we?
We were talking about Raw. The other segment that I really enjoyed involved Michael Cole, Edge, Miz, and Alex Riley. Michael Cole was in the ring. They had a new computer. And he's reading the email from the GM. He calls out Edge, demands an apology for destroying the last computer. Edge comes out. He repeats his quest to eliminate stupidity from WWE. He vows to win the championship. At this point, Michael Cole interrupts him. He reads the GM's email. He announces the Battle Royal that would be in the main event, but says Edge won't be in it because he has been traded to SmackDown. Edge was very happy about this. He was happy to be out of have the GM out of his hair and go to a better show. He started threatening Michael Cole and insulting him. And this is where it got great, because Michael Cole became completely indignant. He declared himself to be the official voice of WWE. He demanded respect. He reminded me very much here of our friend Sean. If Sean was a WWE announcer cutting a heel promo, it would have sounded a lot like this.
It's actually true.
Maybe that's why I liked it so much. It also helped that he's cutting this promo on Edge, and for literally no reason, he is standing on a podium with like an 18-inch riser.
Mm-hmm.
He's just to be towering over Edge. That is such a petty, small man thing to do, and that made it great. So, Edge was about to kill him when out came Miz and Riley, and then Edge and Miz had a fun segment. Edge called Miz an Edge wannabe, talked about what they had in common, the money in the bank, they both have one-syllable names. He said he was using awesomeness while Miz was still in high school. He said he had had a wedding, a divorce, and live sex on air, although he could not use that term, but he had never seen Miz talk to a woman. At this point, he said, unless you count Alex Riley, Riley made fun of Edge's long hair and pouty lips. Cole, who was back in commentary, cackled. I love it when heels make jokes and other heels cackle. That's always great. So the point of all this was they went back and forth. They started a fight. Edge speared Riley, but then Miz laid him out with a skull-crushing finale. And it took me a second to figure out why they were doing this angle if Edge is leaving. Then I realized bragging rights is coming up. and Miz is going to captain Team Raw, and Edge is going to captain Team SmackDown. That's going to come back to the two of them. So there you go.
Let's play a quick song here, and then we're going to get into Nitro. No, I didn't mean Impact. I mean Nitro. So hold on one sec. Let's play this song. It's called Granny Goes to See Norm. It's a song of sorts.
All right.
It should be good. Speaking of comedy and jokes, your birthday this year on November 4th, Friday,
yeah.
I'm not going to be around that night. I'm going to Norm McDonald. He's doing a comedy show.
Oh, really?
He's the best comedian in the whole world.
Well, why don't you take me for my birthday?
You want to go see Norm McDonald?
No. He probably uses a lot of foul language, huh? Who is he? I never heard
of him. He's awesome! You've never heard of Norm McDonald?
Okay, I'll look that up after I get off here.
There's this movie coming out.
Yes.
Title undetermined at this point.
Chairman of the board.
Oh, all right.
So
do something with that, you freak.
You just took Greg's phone call.
I read the board is spelled B-O-R-E-D.
Yeah. Anyway, enough of that.
Oh, Granny.
Okay.
You like the finish?
The finish was kind of funny there. Yes.
That was not the best song I ever heard.
All right.
Play another song, or?
Let's try one more here, and then we will get into Nitro. Eli Can't Work, this is called.
Uh-oh.
I don't know.
It's Genesis. It's taking too long.
Eli can't work. Eli can't talk. Only thing he's got is that he's 7 feet tall. He's got no body. He's got no look. He's got nothing going for him.
Okay, that was funny. Didn't need the long intro, but it was funny.
Nah, the long intro was all right. All right, it's time to review Impact, everyone. I'm sorry. Hey, the show. I can't even decide if the show was better or worse than Impact. Like,
I will say,
it's hard to describe.
This was better because, and this is, it was just barely better. But one of the things I hate most about Impact is its ADD pacing.
Yeah.
Between the commercial break, you will get a match and three promos, and it drives me nuts. This show did not hurt, it did not wear me out.
Some people will say, how can you think Raw, for example, is better than Impact? Because Raw is boring and Impact is exciting. Well, apparently we have different definitions of the word exciting. To me, the term exciting means something that inspires excitement. I don't watch Impact and ever get excited. Therefore, I don't find the show exciting. I do find it frenetic.
Yes, that's a good word.
Frenetic.
Spastic, maybe.
Impact is far more frenetic than Nitro. So if that's what you're into, if you're into a show that is just bam, 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 all action and movement, then Impact is a much better show. If you're looking for a show with more professional wrestling action, you're going to get more on Impact.
At least on this episode of Nitro, this.
Not a whole hell of a lot more, quite frankly, but more. And the other problem is, I got to say this because I was doing some investigations. I'm pretty sure that on the episode of Nitro that we watched originally, I could be wrong. I was doing a cursory look watching the show, but I think there was a Chris Benoit Disco Inferno match, which ended up being edited off the show, which would explain why during a 1 hour period there was only about 4 minutes of wrestling action, maybe five.
That would be part of it.
But regardless, this show, again, this was during the peak. This was when WCW was at its fucking hottest. They were making more money than they'd ever made. They were making more money than anyone had ever made. They were doing gigantic ratings. They were on the streak of, I don't actually know when the streak ended. It was actually right around this time, if I recall correctly. But, you know, they had the winning streak over Raw. They were doing gigantic numbers, especially compared to Impact today, for example. But the point was, you watch this show, and it was monstrously boring. I watched this show, and I thought, is there any wrestling on this program? It was interviews. It was video packages. It was analysis by Tony Schiavone. It was more interviews. It just went on and on and on. The longest 42 minutes of my life, at least in the last couple of days. Now, was it a horrible show? No. Was it a boring show? Yes. And meanwhile, on the other channel, this same night, DX was invading WCW. So, you run with a pat hand too long, it bites you on the ass. That is the story of Impact. It opened up with Macho Man threatening to beat up Bret Hart.
There's actually a clip of an interview from Thunder. But yes. We then had the Nitro Girls, who were doing their dance, when who should interrupt but Alex Wright? He came out to his song, he was doing his dance, security led him away, he was never seen again.
No. Next out was Randy Savage. And amazingly, in 2010, he has retired of his own volition. Which, looking at this show, everyone is either still in the business, dead, or handicapped, in the case of Bret Hart. But, I mean, it was just one guy after another. Yeah. If you
were not 12 years ago,
if you are not dead or handicapped, you are still wrestling today on this show.
Now, there's one exception.
Who was that?
Bill Goldberg.
Well, actually, Alex Wright, too. Alex Wright. Goldberg would be the exception. That's true.
Is Scott Norton still working?
I think he's doing some stuff, yeah.
Okay.
So, well, he's a bodyguard, too. Anyway, out came Randy Savage, who's retired of his own volition, and Kevin Nash. Savage was huge.
Yes.
Nash did Scott Hall's usual poll, and they sort of explained why Hall wasn't there, but they didn't have a very good reason. Now, for those that were not around during these days, Scott Hall legitimately crashed like a dozen cars over a five-year period. And I think he may have crashed one this weekend. I'm not entirely positive. But regardless, he was not there for this show. So Nash said the Wolfpack was expanding. Savage was the newest member.
You didn't even mention what Nash's excuse for Hall's absence was, though.
He was drinking a pina colada somewhere.
Correct. It's not that he was drunk driving. He was merely an alcoholic.
Sure.
Okay.
So, they talked about Bret, and Nash wants to beat Bret up as well. Savage said Hogan wasn't there. That was fine. Said some nonsensical lines I could not understand. Nash, by the way, was much heavier than he is nowadays. He had a more ponderous gut. He was wearing a black t-shirt. It was tucked into his jeans, and his jeans were tucked into his boots.
And he's 6'10".
Mid-90s, everyone.
This one stuck out.
Called out the newest member. It was Conan, who, well, physically he's changed, but in general, exact same Conan it was in 1998.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, took a mic, put over both guys, then they began singing a song.
And then it ended.
And it ended, yeah.
There was a lot of, all three of these guys were, a lot of what they said was just to entertain themselves, which was not good, but the other thing that was not good about this was, you know, they were all NWO, but now some guys are wearing Wolfpack. And Schiavone said, and this is almost a direct quote, "You need a scorecard to keep track of the rosters within the NWO." That's not good. That's very, very bad.
You know, every now and then people argue, and this was actually an argument on the board a couple of weeks ago when Nash went nuts on Jeff Hardy and RVD for talking about what big stars they were, but he said they could not draw 1,000 on the road, and how he'd sold out 30,000-seat buildings, which we've talked about many times now. Nash, in his entire life, never sold out a 30,000-seat building. There was once a show that did 30,000 fans that he was the main event of, but they'd sold all the tickets before they'd even announced him as the main event on the show. Regardless, people seem to forget that when people look back fondly at Kevin Nash in the 90s. They're actually looking back fondly at Hall and Nash. Mostly Hall. This show here with Kevin Nash on his own without Scott Hall, Kevin Nash was a tall guy. His promo wasn't very good. He wasn't all that good a worker. He didn't work on this show, but at the time he was not a very good worker. And without Scott Hall, this segment was deathly boring. Savage brought a little bit of life to it.
Actually, Conan brought a little bit of life
to it. Well, Conan did. Conan brought a lot of life to it.
Savage brought life to it, but it was what is this man talking about life?
Yeah.
Kevin Nash was, in fact, just a tall guy with long hair.
So, showed footage of a massive clusterfuck last week where Brett hit Nash with a belt and put an unconscious Hogan on top of an unconscious Savage for a pinfall.
This is an amazing clip.
Then they cut away.
There was, yes.
To the back!
There was just carnage in this clip. There was Bret Hart walking around doing stuff, three wrestlers and the ref down on the mat laid out. No idea what happened, but that's Bret cheated, apparently. We had a clip of Juventud Guerrero. Juventud Guerrera had just lost his mask. They had a promo about him talking about being an Aztec warrior. He was talking about his Aztec heritage and how he wanted to represent. This is Juventud Guerrera without a mask, trying to act like a normal human being. He was also very boring. Instead of just letting Juvie be Juvie.
Out came Chris Jericho, the Cruiserweight champion at the time. He had a poster of Dean Malenko. Welcomed us to Monday Night Jericho, buried Juvie, buried the poster, interviewed the poster, which of course didn't talk, which was the gimmick of Dean Malenko. Chris Jericho, he was overflowing with charisma on this show. He had a match with Chavo Guerrero. He beat him. It was 2 minutes long. It was great while it lasted. And Chris Jericho was a mid-carder for life in WCW.
Yep.
He was slotted as, you're small, you've got long hair, you'll never be a main eventer, and they never let him be. Slotted for life. The same Chris Jericho that went on to become one of the bigger stars in WWE history and a several-time world champion and had Wrestler of the Year 2 years in a row in the Wrestling Observer Newsletter Awards, but these people just saw him as a small flipper.
Just a guy, yes. Of course, the other side of this match was Chavo Guerrero. They were doing some deal where he was wearing the best shirt ever, the Eddie Guerrero is my favorite wrestler t-shirt.
Yeah.
Eddie was bossing him around and being a dick and telling him what to do. And all I can think was people have been trying to make Chavo a star for 12 years now.
Yeah.
It has not worked.
Eddie Guerrero also, mid-carder for life. One of the other biggest stars of the OOs for WWE, Eddie Guerrero. They saw him as a Mexican with a mullet that could do a lot of flips. We had clips of Rick Steiner legitimately breaking the neck of Buff Bagwell. For those of you not around at the time, Buff...
It sucked.
Buff was nearly paralyzed. He underwent emergency neck surgery. They put him back together. They said he would never work again. He fought and scratched and clawed his way back to WCW, where they immediately turned him heel.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
WCW, everybody. We had announcers trying to figure out why Bret Hart had done what he had done.
For the second time on the show, we saw clips of Randy Savage talking about Bret from Thunder.
Yeah. So, Bobby and Tony had both had a procedure done on their neck, so they talked about surgery, how much it sucked. Said they'd update us on Buff the next night. More clips of Savage. And then, who should come out nearly 13 years ago, but Eric Bischoff and Hulk Hogan as heels. 10-10-10. They're probably turning heel again.
Yes.
Now, granted, this time around, they probably will not have Brutus Beefcake, who was there in a beard, standing there looking stern. Hogan did a nonsensical promo. He talked about how there was nothing left to conquer. No further promoters to break in half, he said. He was wrong. There was a promoter to come who he would break in half, financially at least. He mentioned he would be it for the rest of eternity. May very well be correct in that assumption. And married Macho Man. And said that the reason Bret did what he did was because he knew where the power laid. And then he said they were too sweet. Again, people look back upon this fondly.
Yes. He also took time to bury Conan for a while, but yes, that was about all he did. He flexed and pointed at his bicep.
Yeah. Meanwhile, on Raw, Steve Austin was kicking ass. Showed a clip of Roddy Piper yelling at Bret, and Bret punched him.
You know, on the one hand, watching this a dozen years later, I never would have remembered what was going on in most of this, so it's good they had a lot of clips to show me. The bad news is, they needed all these clips because there was so much going on these shows. There was just too much crap going on. And then we got the miracle of the last years of WCW, Bill Goldberg. He came out to wrestle Scott Norton. I had now, by this point, heard the NWO theme at least 47 times in the show. Scott Norton, in 1998, mind you, had a sweet mullet. He came out, he was a big, scary guy. Goldberg came out, he was U.S. champion. He was, I think they said, 76-0 at this point. He had the pyro, he had light show, he looked awesome, he had super intensity, the fans were chanting his name. These two big, scary mofos went face-to-face, and for about 3 minutes, they had a fight.
They did.
They clubbered each other. They ran into each other with all their might. They hurked each other into the air. And in the end, Goldberg countered Scott Norton's shoulder breaker finisher, hit a spear and a big jackhammer and got the win, and people were going apeshit.
Mm-hmm.
And you've mentioned this before, but how Goldberg did not get screwed up at some point is...
It's a miracle.
It's a miracle. It is a mystery. It is anachronistic with everything else going on with the company
at
the time.
Well, he did get screwed up.
In the end.
In the end.
But...
Well, hold on a second. You say in the end, but the end came like a year after he debuted. They managed to not screw him up for about a year.
Yeah.
Maybe a year
and a half.
That's
a miracle.
It is a miracle that it went that long. But in the end...
They didn't screw it up until he was a top guy before they screwed it up.
But then, boy, did they screw it up.
They screwed it up big time. But yeah. At least they get them get to the top before screwing him up.
It is amazing.
As opposed to WWE, who screws guys up when they're at the bottom.
Well, unless you're a friend of Triple H.
Well, these things happen.
Sheamus has gotten very lucky because he's a good spotter. And unfortunately, there aren't more great spotters in WWE.
There's only so many guys
who can
be there.
Superstars.
Yes.
Yeah. And then we had a Bret Hart interview. Again, we have to presume there was a Benoit match on the show. Because otherwise, there were 4 minutes of wrestling in this hour-long television program. So... Bret did an interview saying the business sucked. It was a terrible place where good men died like dogs. How ironic on this
show.
That
was an amazing line.
There were some good men on this show.
This business is a plastic trench filled with pimps and thieves where good men die like dogs.
Yeah.
Wow.
Said Savage had talked about him for years, never had the guts to step in the ring with him. Said he was half troll, half lizard, didn't have what it took to beat him, and basically said that what he wanted to say to Hogan was going to have to wait until the next night.
It was actually amazing because he said, I can't say it to Hogan because he's not here. Hulk Hogan had been in the ring like 20 minutes prior.
Yeah.
But he's not here. So the deal was because of the playoffs, they were doing an hour of Nitro on Monday and then two more the next night. And so they were teasing the Hogan-Bret face-off for the next night. So after Bret had screwed Savage to help Hogan, you would find out why Bret helped Hogan. And Hogan would find out why. It was a horrible show.
I thought Bret's interview was all right. Actually, it was pretty good, especially when you compare it to modern interviews. He was outstanding. But on this show, wow, what a boring program. So anyway, the glory days of Nitro, everybody, sucked.
They did.
Sucked. I always mention that article that I wrote, but I really wasn't much of a prophet. I mean, if you watched this show, it should have been obvious, for fuck's sake. All right, let's play... I don't think this is a song, but it's apparently something awesome involving Ric Flair and WrestleCast. So let me play it.
Ooh, because I can stay all night and stay a little longer, dance all night and dance a little longer. What's your girlfriend's name again?
Cat.
Cat. I don't see why you can't take off your dress and throw it in a corner. God darn it, Cat, just stay a little longer. Woo, 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 woo. Woo, woo.
Wow.
Huh.
Well, there
you
go.
What the hell is WrestleCast?
Ric Flair, everybody.
All right.
All right. Should we play... Actually, I don't have anything new, really.
What can top that?
Well, nothing, obviously.
All right.
All right. We'll do this, then. We're going to talk about the tag team match, and I'll look for some songs here. And then we'll do some shout-outs, and then we'll wrap this Mother Bear up. So... Let me actually do one thing here. Let me get a song prepared. And then we'll get talking. Oh, I got some good songs.
There's also Ring of Honor.
That's right. There was a great Ring of Honor.
There was a fucking awesome Ring of Honor show.
Well, talk about it a little bit here. I'll get this loaded up.
So Ring of Honor, everyone, if you hate what's going on with modern wrestling and how much it sucks, watch Ring of Goddamn Honor. They get everything right. First of all, this has nothing to do with this show, but we've been talking about stip matches a lot lately. A few days ago, they announced the stipulation for one of their matches for Final Battle 2010. It's going to be El Generico versus Kevin Steen, with Generico's mask versus Steen's ROH career on the line. And we talk about all the stips in WWE and who cares. When I saw the stips for that, I thought out loud almost, holy shit, I cannot believe that one of these two events would happen. And I realized immediately, I must see the show. So they have sold me on Final Battle. It's October. So then that brings us to this episode. First of all, it probably helped. This is the first time I'd actually watched the show on television on HDNet. So I was watching it on my 42-inch TV instead of a 6-inch computer monitor. That made it better. Eddie Edwards came out. He announced a 10-minute hunt. Before he could get much farther, Jim Cornette came out. He said Shane Hagedorn had been setting up pussies for Eddie to fight, challenged him to fight a real man. Shane Hagedorn cut him off, and I've been maybe the harshest critic of Shane Hagedorn in the world lately, ever, really. He cut a great promo here.
Yeah.
He cut a great promo saying he was the manager, Eddie was the champion, and as the manager, Eddie would do what he said. And Edwards told him to fuck off, and then he would take on anyone. So,
you know what a stip almost greater than Generico and Steen is?
No.
The Kings of Wrestling and Shane Hagedorn against the Briscoes and Daddy Briscoe.
Is that really a stip?
Yeah, I'll tell you why.
All right.
Well, it's kind of it's a stip in the sense that if you pay for the show, you are guaranteed Papa Briscoe, an untrained worker who cold-cocked Chris Hero during an angle. He's going to beat the fuck out of Shane Hagedorn.
Well, you put it that way.
When I heard that match, I thought, this is fucking genius. If they put anyone else on the side of the Kings of Wrestling, it would have not meant half of what it means for it to be Shane Hagedorn. That man's hated. He is really hated by a lot of people. And they hate him
legitimately.
Well, here's what it is. Here's what it is. He kind of has go away heat. They will not pay. No one is going to pay to see someone fake beat up Shane Hagedorn. They hate him so much they just don't want to see him. But I think that people hate him so much that if they think there's a possibility of him really getting the shit kicked out of him, they're going to pay.
You know,
and that's what this is.
They opened this program here.
A genius stipulation.
They opened this program with the clip of Davey Richards firing Hagedorn, and he fired him with a left hand to the jaw.
Mm-hmm.
And it looked awesome. And I thought, that was great, and I want to watch it in slow-mo. And in slow-mo, I'm afraid to inform you, it actually was a fantastic worked punch.
Mm.
I was so pissed off because I wanted to see Hagedorn punched in the jaw so bad.
Yeah, but you just know. I mean, you know.
As you'll agree, Davey Richards is a much better worker than Papa Briscoe.
That's the point.
Yes.
You know that even if he tries to not punch Shane Hagedorn, he's going to cold cock him.
He will potato this man at some point.
It's almost a guarantee.
Yes.
So anyway, I give Shane Hagedorn credit for going in there and taking a bullet.
Taking one for the team.
All of the Vinnie Verhais in the world.
Yes. So, we had Eddie Edwards versus Kenny King. They showed clips of the All Night Express laying out Delirious with a pile driver. They had like the best spot ever early. It was all just early chain wrestling, and then Kenny did a wacky backflip for no reason and landed like on one knee in a cocky pose. And Edwards immediately ran across the ring and hit a shining wizard like kick to the face. It ruled. They did do some stupid stuff like a front suplex on the apron for the heat, and then a wacky leg drop to the floor. So there was some dumb shit, also a top rope superplex, but they had a really good match, and the finish fucking ruled. They did. Kenny was going for a fireman's carry slam or something off the ropes. Eddie turned that into a Hurricane Rana. Kenny turned that into a sunset flip, and Eddie turned that into the half crab for the win. This was so much better than anything on the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view I had seen the day before.
It was an outstanding finish.
This ruled.
Yeah.
And you mentioned in your review that you don't think it went 10 minutes. It went at least 8.
Well, I guess someone explained to me that the 10-minute hunt is for non-title matches. And if you beat Eddie in the 10 minutes, you get a title shot. Apparently, that's the gimmick.
But the point is, you mentioned it did not feel like it went 10 minutes. It almost did, but it didn't feel that long because it was so damn good.
Yeah.
So, they did a video recapping the Steen Generico feud, and then they had a very silly close-up of Tyler Black making angry faces. So, we then had Tyler Black's final ROH match, at least on TV. It was Tyler Black versus Evan Bourne's brother, who I identified as a jobber with star tattoos on his back that matched the tattoos on his gear. If these tattoos are real, his career is finished. This makes AJ Styles' tattoo look cool. So it was a little long. It was an extended squash, but Tyler Black squashed him, and it was fun.
Here's the weird thing. They tape really far in advance.
Mm-hmm.
And they taped stuff with Tyler Black that was going to air after Tyler Black had already lost the title and left. So you're kind of in a jam. You have to send Tyler out there without the belt, so you immediately get people thinking, well, obviously he's losing the belt, because they tape TV without him having the belt.
For this one, I assume, because they picked this up, both men were in the ring. I assume Tyler came out with the belt, and then took it off almost immediately.
I know, I don't know if it was this one, but I know they taped a match with Tyler where he did not have the belt.
I see.
And actually, you know what, now that I think about it, I don't think it was this match, but regardless, you've got to... There's the issue of, you know, the guy has the belt, but how do you tape the TV after he loses the belt? Do you give him the belt to go out there? Do you not give him the belt to go out there? Do you reveal things? And then the other part of it is, Tyler Black is leaving the company to go to WWE, and so he squashed this young fella here. So, that's an odd way to be...
Yeah.
It's an odd way to depart, to kill a man. Now, here's my idea... I think that ROH, since they tape so far in advance, should have a match or two at the tapings where let's just say that Tyler Black had let's say that Tyler Black okay. So Tyler Black was gonna lose at the iPay-per-view. This was going to air after the iPay-per-view. You know, instead of necessarily sending Tyler out for his matches without the belt, you can always, at the tapings, do a match with Tyler where you send him out with the belt, you have him beat a dude, but then you never bother airing it.
Yes, that is the most... Yeah, that's...
Why
did that take you 4 minutes to spit out?
Because I was trying to find my... Yes, I was thinking of a lot of different things.
They do not need to show this match.
Exactly. But you don't need to air everything that you tape. Like, you can send out a champion with his belt to have a match with somebody, and so the fans in the building, you know, after a while, they're going to know that some of these matches aren't going to air, but they're not going to know. They're not going to know if it's going to air or not.
Mm-hmm.
So then you don't have people coming back from the tapings going, well, Tyler worked and he didn't come out with the belt, or you don't end up having a match on TV where Tyler comes out and beats the shit out of somebody. Because, I mean, at the tapings, you had to get Tyler over for the crowd. He probably had to squash somebody. But he didn't need to air this match. So anyway, that was my thought. Just every now and then you should tape some matches for TV that don't necessarily air, just to throw a red herring at the fans. So the fans that show up to live events, nothing is really getting spoiled to them because they don't know what the hell's going to air and what's not. That makes sense?
Yes.
It was a very roundabout way.
It did take a long time.
I would have done a lot better job writing this down.
Correct.
Than trying to formulate it in my mind live on the air. But anyway, those are my thoughts.
You, and in the end, you are correct. They did not need to air this. They could have done a different match or a video package or 100 other things. So then we got the main... Actually, I take that back. We got a promo. Steve Corino and Kevin Steen. Steve Corino addressed stupidity in pro wrestling that happens in all other promotions. It does not happen in Ring of Honor, he said. He said, pick your poison was the best idea ever because it meant they could pick who would destroy Generico tonight. And Kevin Steen picked Davey Richards. He had the help of Generico's mask. He put the mask on and tried to think like Generico. Who would Generico be most afraid of? And the answer, of course, was Kevin Steen. But after that, it would be Davey Richards, who once hurt his knee. So then... Corino started talking, said next week Generico would pick Steen's opponent, but that didn't matter who he picked because no man can beat Kevin Steen. Fucking awesome this was.
I think Corino might be on the show next week, and I'm very excited.
Your show?
Yeah.
Excellent. And then we had the main event of Davey Richards versus El Generico. They had a fucking awesome match. Early on, They did not do a bunch of spots. They did not do a 400 move sequences. They did not do a bunch of wacky flips. They just did tackles and chops and kicks and arm drags. And it was great because everything was done so damn well. Davey did a bunch of Indian deathlock type stuff. Generico made his comeback, hit a big dive, busted out a half Nelson German suplex off the top rope.
That's my only complaint about this match. That move should end Generico's or Davey Richards' career. You know, if Davey Richards was going to retire in December, which he's not anymore, but if he was going to, then someone should have given him a half Nelson German suplex off the top rope onto his fucking head.
Yes.
That's how you write a man out of a promotion forever. Instead, this wasn't even the finish.
No.
He got...
It was at least a near fall, but...
He took a half Nelson German suplex onto his head and got his foot on the ropes and they kept wrestling.
Yes.
Sometimes a move is just too big.
Yes.
This is a move that... Okay, a regular German, or they could have done a million moves off the top rope, but this one was just like this.
Why do that if it's not going to be the finish?
At the very least, this should be the finish and in a title change, not just a spot in a match. But other than that, this was outstanding.
Yeah, and as a move, it sure looked cool.
I'll say yes.
And Davey is now using the ankle lock, and he's stealing not just Kurt Angle's move, but a lot of the same setups for it, which is fine. Then he eventually won clean with a cloverleaf. They shook hands, and that was that. This show made me love pro wrestling.
Well, I was... The other thing, this is not a criticism of the match at all, or the show, or anything else, but poor Generico is the walking wounded. And seeing him in this match, I felt pain. I, like, felt pain throughout this match for this poor fucker. So... I don't know what the stipulation, I don't know what they're going to do. I cannot fathom them unmasking Generico. I've seen Generico unmasked.
He does not look like a star.
Well, maybe El Generico would still work without his mask on.
He may be more generic, actually.
He's
yes.
better off with a mask, everybody. And Steen leaving, you know, I would figure if either of the two were leaving for a while, it would be Generico just because he's all banged up. But I guess we'll see what happens. But I hope that... Generico's doing all right, because he's in bad shape. Lots of injuries. Anyway, great show. Check it out, ROH on HDNet. It's every Monday night at 5 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern, a lead-in to Raw, and it was much better than Raw, except for the Cena angle. The Cena angle was really quite great, but as far as wrestling, nothing on any of the shows this week touched Ring of Honor, with the exception, I'm afraid, of the tag match that we watched.
I will admit, this touched Ring of Honor.
We saw a tag match on 24/7. It was Rocky Johnson and Tito Santana against Adrian Adonis and Dick Murdoch from June 17th, 1984. I had just turned 9, everybody. Rocky Johnson's... I don't know if I want to say he's gotten a bad rap, but he was a shining star in this match. He was... outstanding. Tito Santana was great, and Adrian Adonis and Dick Murdoch were the best fucking heel team.
Goddamn these two.
In a long
these
time.
These two. So, so great. They opened up, they were introduced, and just to give you an idea of how much wrestling has changed. First of all, this thing was in a giant arena. It was probably the Spectrum. They play hockey and basketball there. Thousands and thousands of people that were there when the lights were up. And then when the match began, they dimmed the lights, and suddenly it looked very, very tiny.
Yeah.
So they did not quite know what they were doing as far as lighting and TV goes at the time. Number two, this was just weird to see. Neither team got music.
Actually, going back to the crowd very quickly, rowdy crowd. They were throwing shit at the ring throughout this match.
Philadelphia has been Philadelphia for a long time.
I'm not even sure why. I mean, were the heels so hated?
Because they were Philadelphia sports fans.
Tito Santana's life was put in danger by shit hurling at the ring?
Because there was garbage on the floor and it wasn't going to throw itself, so they had to do it.
I see.
So yes, the other team got music. The heels, this was a non-title match, but they were the tag team champions. But they were standing in the ring, and as they were being introduced, the babyfaces just entered the ring right in front of the camera. They have taken... enormous strides in the television production department in the past 25 years. So I guess you would hope so. So then the heels, all four men in the ring, they're looking at each other, they're talking smack or whatever, and then the heels attack. There's an ambush. And they're beating them up, and they're elbowing them and punching them, but then the babyfaces fight back and fight them off, and they send the heels packing outside the ring. So The heels' plan has been foiled. They have discovered they cannot, a full frontal assault won't work. And so Dick Murdoch, rather than selling pain or fear or distress, he simply leans on the apron. He puts one elbow on the apron and puts his chin in his hand, and he stares at the baby faces in thought. He's trying to formulate a plan to attack these men. If this does not sound great, then I apologize, because it was great.
You're no Dick Murdoch, Vinny.
In any way.
Well, fat.
I'm much fatter than him.
That's true.
Yeah. No, I'm not Dick Murdoch. So, this match, once they started wrestling, for 80% of it, it was fine.
Oh, I disagree. I thought this match was awesome, because it was great tag team action. Tito Santana did some wacky high spots early. He did some arm drags. He got cut off. Heel tagged his partner. Partner took an arm drag. Just great professional wrestling. They cut off Tito. They went to work. And then the thing I've been waiting an hour to talk about. Santana gets thrown out of the ring, and they gave him a body slam on the cement. Tito Santana sold it like his career was in imminent jeopardy. This may be his last match ever. He screamed that he was having trouble moving. His partner raced around the ring. His partner helped him sit up, rolled him over, began massaging his lower back and patting it down, doing everything he could to loosen up these tight muscles. Tito's career was saved by Rocky Johnson, but it was looking grim for a few moments there because of a body slam on cement. Rocky was yelling at the ref. He was yelling at the guys. Tito finally got thrown back into the ring. He could still barely move. This past Sunday, in the opener, a Falls Count Anywhere submission match, I saw John Morrison take a skull-crushing finale on the cement. He did not get slammed on the cement, mind you. He got his head, his skull,
his face,
rammed with gravity, obviously, and a heavy man behind him, pushing him downwards, slammed his head into the cement. Now, first off, in real life, this would kill a man. Morrison takes a skull-crushing finale on the fucking cement. And again, this is Miz's finisher in a padded wrestling ring. He took this move on the cement, and within 30 seconds, he was climbing a lighting rig to do a high spot. This is why no one gives a fuck about wrestling anymore. Not this thing in particular, but in general. People today are watching a cartoon. They're not watching a fake sporting event where they can suspend their disbelief and get into it. They are watching a cartoon. They are watching the Roadrunner running off a cliff and floating in midair while the coyote falls down to the ground, and then a rock, a boulder, falls off the cliff, lands on Wile E. Coyote. He is crushed, and then, of course, a couple minutes later, he's back chasing the Roadrunner again. That's what people are watching nowadays. This is why people don't care. Why would you care about any of these people? They're all cartoon characters. They take skull-crushing finales on the cement, and they're back on their feet 30 seconds later. These two fucking guys, Santana, He takes this body slam on the cement, and he sold this. He sold this like his back could potentially be broken. He was incapacitated for minutes on end because of this body slam. So anyway, I got pissed off watching it just because of how much everything sucks nowadays. So he sells and he sells and he sells. And finally, he does a series of desperation amateur wrestling sit-outs and gymnastics rolls, and he finally makes the hot tag.
Now, even before you get to there, we need to talk about the struggle a little bit. They did the spot where he's rolling around and Adonis can't get his hands on him, and then, of course, the big finish is he goes between Adonis's legs for the tag. I've seen this done many times before. I've done it myself more than once. What I've not seen done is Adonis helped this out by, as Tito was going through his legs, Adonis took off at a dead sprint and hit the ropes on the other side of the ring as Tito made the tag, thus giving Rocky Johnson time to make his big entrance and space. Awesome. Now, the hot tag.
Yeah. Rocky Johnson went apeshit. He vaulted into the ring like he was a pole vaulter. He may have hit 16 feet. He did a wild dance. He shook. He shimmied. He threw punches. And 16,000 people or whatever in the Philadelphia Spectrum went absolutely wild. This was like the best hot tag I've ever seen. The heels were just flying around for this guy. He's, quite frankly, Rocky Johnson. I think even The Rock would say this. He really wasn't all that good. But God damn, did he look good in this match.
Remember a week or so ago we were talking about the Rock and Roll Express?
Yeah.
And how Robert Gibson was lucky to be where he was? Rocky Johnson may have been an upgrade.
Yes.
Over Robert Gibson for that. For the guy who stands in the ring waiting for Ricky Morton to tag him in. He was a house of fire like no one had ever seen. When he did the vault into the ring, he was almost vertical upside down.
Yeah, it was in a handstand vault.
It was astounding. And he's punching and dancing, and he throws this drop kick. And then this is the other part that made it great. Adrian Adonis was awesome, if you didn't know. He takes the drop kick, and he throws himself backwards over the top rope, which would be amazing in and of itself, except in the process, he managed to get himself tangled in the ropes.
Yeah.
Sweet.
And Murdoch then got thrown into him.
Yes.
Into his gut.
Yes.
The heels tumble around like clowns. It breaks down into a four-way. They go to the opposite corners.
I still can't believe this finish.
And then we have the best finish ever. The baby faces are in opposite corners with the heels. They throw the heels at each other. And for reasons that cannot be explained, except that it's professional wrestling and it's awesome, they're running at each other, and Dick Murdoch cannot help but duck down and backdrop his own partner high in the air.
Okay, here's my theory. Here's my theory on how this worked.
They were going to bonk heads, you see.
Yes.
So Dick was like, okay, well, I'll sacrifice my partner so that I don't bonk heads with him.
Well,
because he's a dick.
He didn't. It's not he decided to back down. It's like, oh no, I'm going to run into my partner. What do I do? I'll just duck. Adonis didn't think about this. He just kept running until he hit Dick Murdoch and then started to flip over his back, at which point perhaps Dick panicked and leapt high into the air, throwing his partner into the sky. That's the best I can do.
So he drop kicks his partner high into the air.
Backdrops his partner.
Gets thrown outside, and then Rocky hits Adonis with the most horrendous big splash I have ever seen in history. This made the Ultimate Warrior splash look like Evan Bourne doing a shooting star press. It was... Let me try to explain this. Everyone stand on your feet and do a single jumping jack, but in midair, fall flat on your stomach. That's essentially what...
Pretty close, actually.
He did here. Wow!
And it got the pin.
And then a graphic appeared on the screen which said, and I swear to God this is a direct quote, Rocky Johnson, Tito Santana, winners!
Winners. They were winners!
This was so great.
It was the best.
I do not care if wrestling dies, as long as there's always 24/7, or YouTube, to watch shit like this. It was so great. So yeah, watch it, everybody. WWE Classics. Rocky Johnson and Tito Santana against Adrian Adonis and Dick Murdoch, June 17th, 1984.
Men who knew what the fuck they were doing.
Men who knew what the fuck they were doing. All right, let me play a quick song here, and then we'll do shout-outs and wrap this baby up. I'm going to beat you so bad, I'm going to call you my honey. I'm gonna beat you so bad, you'll know why I'm money. Oh! Time and time again, I gotta turn back around and tell these hoes that I am HNIC. Bitch, that's just the way it goes. I be on that shit that'll have you on that I don't want no mo. This time, I need all my free clothes to get down on the floor.
What you say? That you only meant well, cause you did. What you say? That it's all for the best, cause it is.
That is a great one.
The Great Klits made that song.
Really?
I can't believe that Fantastic. No one's made a drop out of me saying Great Klits. Bound to happen now. Shout outs, everybody. Let's get these going here. This is from Livid. Brian and Vinny, I finally subscribed about 5 months ago at the recommendation of my brethren at Wrestle Hut 2000, especially Hulka Matt, who is an active member of the board. I saw you two at Tulalip's Night of Champions over the summer in an epic battle against the Ideal Douchebags. If I may play the mark, and that particular event actually sold the woman who has since become my wife on live pro wrestling events. So thank you for that. Wow.
Well, what do you expect?
Wow, how about that? Yep. I don't even remember Night of Champions, Tulalip. To anybody listening, you have no idea how absolutely worth it subscribing is. I'm a dirt cheap bastard, and even I can manage to find $10.99 a month. That's less than the cost of two mixed drinks at a bar outside of specials and Dagnabbit. Two drinks doesn't entertain you anywhere near as long as a subscription will. Stop freeloading, I did, and I'll never go back. That's Joe from Seattle of Livid Liquids Productions.
Thanks, Joe.
Yeah, he also says, speaking of bars, I don't know if you two are karaoke fans. Well, Vinny is. I run a little karaoke show from Monday and Tuesday nights at the Dubliner in the Fremont neighborhood of Seattle. And if you ever feel like making a tremendous dick of yourselves and getting a huge pop from the crowd for doing so, head on in.
That sounds like me exactly, actually.
Actually, it does. Big fan of yours, and the show is a hell of a lot of fun. Well, maybe Livid Liquid, Joe, maybe we'll head down there at some point.
We should.
Vinny actually probably will.
I guarantee you I will. I don't know exactly when.
I'm not much of a karaokeer, but Vinny certainly is. All right, it's from Peter. Chico and Vinny, this is a cellophone from the board. I thought I'd cash in my complimentary shout-out. You got me hooked was the free shows, especially the B&V shows featuring Vinny's golden tones. Since then, I purchased a subscription and enjoyed it quite a bit. I'm looking forward to continue supporting the Empire in hopes that one day Brian gets a golden Titanic. Shout-outs to my mom, my friends Josh, Staley, TJ, CJM, Vinny, the one without the golden tones, Bruno and Andre, Josh's dad, Barack, Alabama, the board, specifically DC Sniper, Michael Barton, and Dead Sea Drop, the WrestleCrap forums, Abe Vagoda, Thomas Lambert. Fuck yous go to Verizon Wireless, Adolf Hitler, and the Axis of Evil.
But first,
not just
Verizon
one or the
Wireless.
Other. Ants, Microsoft, edited CDs, Rush, except for Limelight. I agree about Rush. Onions, Xbox, customer support. Thanks, Brian and Vinny, for keeping me entertained during such a crappy summer. It was a shitty summer. Thank you very much for that, Peter. It's from Gregor. I had a bugger, so I'm cashing in my bugger shout-out. Shout-out to my lovely new daughter, Ella, tremendous wee woman. Firstly, I just want to express my concern for the lovable but sadly rotund Vincent Verhey. Vince, you seriously need to lose weight.
This is a shout-out?
I recently bought my fat mate an XL shirt. It was the size of a tent. If you're really a 2XL, then I find repugnant.
Wow.
You still do okay on the radio show, though.
Well, fortunately, fat does not impede audio quality.
I think you should set yourself a challenge. If you can lose 30 pounds by the end of the year, Brian has to completely shave his head. Come on, big man, you can do it.
Okay, number one, no, I can't. Number two, I think Brian would do that anyway.
Yeah.
Brian is prone to random...
I was
going to
say, do it by next summer and I'll just do it whether you do or not.
Yes, Brian shaves his head all the time.
Shout outs to DC Sniper for being tremendous on the board and Twitter and for calling us... Let's move on. To Brian for providing me with audio each day for my 30-minute commute each way to work, and for Dave Meltzer for being great in every way. Also to Carl Stern, whose shows have gotten pretty great as of late. Great website, so incredibly worth the little money it costs. That is from GN Wrestling. Fine job, Gregor.
Yeah, I'm a double XL.
Porker. This is from Tom. Ryan and Vinny, just cashing in my shout-out after joining the site in March. I'd like to thank both of you for the entertainment you've provided me over the last 7 months. The astounding amount of audio on the site has turned my soul-destroying job into simply a soul-crushing one. I'm starting university in a week, and after it consumes 3 years of my life, I plan to come to one of the Vegas trips, and if I manage to gain some money between now and then, I may be able to come sooner. For example, if I win the lottery, or stop spending the money I do make on getting hammered. have to admit that I do not heed your warning and ventured onto the board, and while I'm in agreement that it is truly a bone-chilling place, it appears there are some genuinely great people tangled in that web of horror. In closing, I'd like to congratulate Dixie Carter for being responsible for the most consistent television show in wrestling history, and my only fuck-offs go to Dixie Carter for being responsible for the most consistently shit television show in wrestling history. That's Stylesco on the board.
Stylesco sounds like a magician.
He does, actually. Patrick. Gentlemen, decided to cash in my shout-out after an enjoyable first month's membership. Just finished signing up for a further 3 months. Can see myself sticking around for a long time. Really enjoy both newsletters and all the awesome audio. Shout-outs to the board. I've only been on a month. I've been called a fool twice. It's still a great place. The boards.ie wrestling forum, the bostoncrab.net podcast, Review, Why, and The Law, Morrissey, Russell Brand, Matt Morgan, and
lost
the
me a long time ago.
In-betweeners. Not usually a hate-filled person, so I don't have a fuck you to give, except for TNA, which fills me with hate, so fuck you, TNA. Thanks for all the quality content. That's from Patrick in Ireland. And finally here, this is from Dan. Dan, from Sydney. Been nearly 2 years since I signed up to your site. I haven't requested my free shout-out until now. Firstly, I began subscribing to the hard copy version of The Observer in 1990, but I realized 2 years ago that it was infinitely better value to sign up to your site instead. Now, do I not only get The Observer each week the day it's published, but I also can download Figure 4 weekly each week, Dragon King newsletter when it comes out, plus listen to great new podcasts every day. Honestly, all you freeloaders should be ashamed of yourself. Sign up now. Two things about the Brian and Vinny show before I get to the shout-out. First, while you're a great host, Brian, and I think Granny is awesome, there's no doubt in my mind that Vinny is the star of the program. Maybe you should change the name to the Vinny and Brian Show. Just putting that out there. No.
Glad we got that settled.
Put that in your ass. Secondly, not sure how to spell his name, but David Hoffhoffy is a genius. Yes, he is. Big shout out to Ed Locke, Foz, Dubs, Mr. J, the fabulous Sebastian. That guy sounds like a magician.
Yes, actually.
Sarah J. Mason Childs, the Queen of Shimmer, Madison Eagles, Kelly, Rate Tank Skater, First Mate William Kidd and his mascot, Polly, my second cousin, Savannah Summers, that fat bastard Gambino, and the rest of the boys and girls involved in Australian wrestling. I'd like to plug my two websites, BettyPaginated.blogspot.com and DocRiot.blogspot.com. Also, please tell Lance I loved his pink tights in that match off Jericho's new DVD. They are spectacular. That is from Dan. There's actually one other thing here. I was told to read something.
And if you're known for one thing, it's doing whatever you are told.
Yeah. Let me find it here. Apparently, there's going to be a song made. Here we go. This is from Don.
Have you pre-read these lyrics?
Brian, this is Doc G. Please use my free shout-out, which after four glorious years with the Empire I've not used, to read the following so that Klitz can finish this year's Halloween song for the Empire. You will be having a duet with the great Vincent Price.
Oh, my.
I need to get some water for this. Are you ready?
I'm ready when you are.
Darkness falls across the land. The midnight hour is close at hand. Creatures crawl in search of blood to terrorize y'all's neighborhood. And whosoever shall be found without the soul for getting down must stand and face the hounds of hell and rot inside a corpse's shell. The foulest stench is in the air, the funk of 40,000 years, and grisly ghouls from every tomb are closing in to seal your doom. And though you fight to stay alive, your body starts to shiver, for no mere mortal can resist the evil of the thriller.
Very well. Very well done.
That was very hard there at the end.
Yeah, it's hard to knowing you're going to go toe to toe with Vincent Price.
I know.
It's hard to match him.
I couldn't do the laugh either.
Well, no one can, but you did your best. You did a good job. If you sucked, I would tell you. You do not suck.
Let's play a real song now. Sorry, everybody. Last one here, and then we'll wrap it up.
I laugh every time.
Good luck topping that one, Klitz. All right, everybody. That's it from here. Of course, we got a big week of shows coming up this week. Dirty Dutch Mantel.
Yeah.
Michael Schiavolo of K1. Lance Storm.
Yeah.
Mick Foley.
Yeah.
Vincent Verhey.
Yeah.
Todd Martin.
Huh?
Me?
Just kidding, Todd.
Myself and I. All of these people coming up.
Dave somebody.
Oh, and Dave Meltzer. I guess he's kind of important. All these people coming up in the next 3 days, everybody. So sign up now. Don't miss it. We'll talk to you again on Thursday night.
Adios.